Good afternoon from where I am. Good morning in the States. Good evening in Asia and Africa. Not Africa, not quite yet, but Asia definitely. So hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. It looks like we're back in business for regular coffee and good conversation, because I've managed to find a way of getting on the internet at home, at my apartment, my studio, or whatever you want to call it, that allows me to do that, to get online without going outside and using public Wi-Fi outside. So it looks like I can just sit and have a cup of coffee in my apartment and talk nonsense for 20 minutes or whatever without going out and looking for public Wi-Fi now. So a small step in the right direction, I think. After a month of very untogether circumstances, financially and technology and all the rest of it. May has been a strange month for me. It's been a month where I was just blocked physically for just about everything. Nothing's happened. Nothing. I couldn't make anything happen. Nothing's happened without me making it happen. And I couldn't make anything happen. So things hopefully will open up now. I know my energy's changed because people are stopping me in the street and asking for directions and asking for the time and just striking up random conversations, which didn't happen for most of me and hasn't happened for a long time, actually. Hasn't happened for quite a while. It used to happen to me quite a lot that random people would start up conversations, but that hasn't happened for a while. But looks like I'm back on in that kind of mode now. I've definitely got more to say. The Wi-Fi is going poo. Here we go. Excellent again. So that's good. You're going to get a running commentary until I work out how stable this Wi-Fi is, but it looks all right. So I've got a large cup of coffee. It's a mug, really. I've got a thermos mug type thing full of coffee. And I'm waiting for somebody to come in. If nobody comes in, I'll just play something from YouTube. I'll play some music or whatever. I've just paid for my YouTube premium subscription, so I don't get adverts on there. I don't necessarily want to play music, actually, because I won't be able to post it as a podcast if I do that. But I was listening to a couple of podcasts from John Campbell, who's a lecturer. I think he's retired, but he used to be a lecturer for nursing studies or something like that. And he does very good information on ivermectin. He's got a bit of an ivermectin bug going on, and he's been fact checked, which is obviously he didn't look happy about at all to me, but he didn't actually say he wasn't happy. I'm hoping this is going to function all right. It keeps going from excellent to poor all the time, but it comes back quite quickly, so we might get away with it. I'm going to find out shortly anyway when I post it. I'm sure somebody will tell me if the sound quality is rubbish, and then I'll work out what's going on after that. And please do tell me. If you think the sound quality is rubbish, then I'll have to find an alternative. But this is my standby method for the time being. I'm not going to play John Campbell, and I'm probably not going to play music, but I am going to find something else to play from YouTube. This is the Dark Horse podcast. It's from about 3 days ago. So this is a conversation about ivermectin. Heather, somebody.
Scientific evidence. That scientific evidence may have implications for what we collectively ought to be doing and what you individually might think. We're not going to make any recommendations as to what you should do, and we are not going to say anything conclusive. conclusive about what the data say because the data are not themselves conclusive. However, it doesn't mean the data don't imply things. And, you know, I think about things very carefully about whether it wants to confront two people who have the proper credentials, have demonstrated a willingness to be responsible about evaluating heterodox scientific processes, and in this case, have us in through a circumstance where a hypothesis they were seeking to be investigated, you know, is science, etc. So, that's not tech.
Okay. So, we mentioned ivermectin before. Ivermectin became somewhat prominent, something people were talking about in the pandemic. Probably April of last year, people were beginning to talk about it. We spent a lot of time, 62nd of this 2021. We'll show how we put it as it was discovered about by scientists. Nice guy, from a patch on his list. So she, called it assumption. They've had 100 cases in an aspirin. And a review in the Journal of Resident Dermatology concluded that from 25 years use, I have remained continued to provide a high margin of safety. Now, that was the, you know, that has nothing to do with efficacy, it's open, in fact, the quote I mean, it's just say efficacy, but safety. So, this is a drug that is widespread in various obvious patterns, both human and non-human population applications, for at this point, almost, you know, coming up on, or actually maybe at this point, 50 years. No, not quite.
I think it's over 40.
Over 40 years. And there have been a few people sounding the gong during the pandemic about whether or not ivermectin might be effective. We know it to be safe in humans from all of these studies that have been done already because it's such a widespread drug and such widespread use, whether it might not be effective either as treatment or as prophylaxis against SARS-CoV-2. Prophylaxis, I'm never sure people know exactly what that means if they are only associating the word with condoms. So prophylaxis just means a preventative. So for instance, we don't have a malaria vaccine yet. So when you travel to malarial areas, you have to take prophylaxis of one sort or the other, depending on what species of malaria is there, if you've got Vivax or Plasmodium. Anyway.
So there are a couple things I want to add to that.
Yep.
First of all, Satoshi Omura, mm-hmm. Shared the Nobel Prize with William Campbell for the discovery of this drug, and it has been in use preventing river blindness and treating river blindness for all of these decades. Now, when we say it is safe, what we are saying is it is comparatively safe. All drugs have downsides.
Yes.
This one has some downsides. In terms of what has been observed, the downsides are short-lived in general and minor, and largely a result of the death of the parasites that this is used to fight. In other words, if you are infected with a worm, a parasitic worm, and then that worm dies, your immune system actually has to take it apart at a molecular level, which may cause you to itch and other things, but that is part and parcel of being cured of the disease. So all drugs have downsides. The downsides on this one are very, very low.
Yes, absolutely. When we first talked at some length about ivermectin back in early January of this year, three studies on ivermectin proceeding in the U.S., none of them funded by NIH or any other U.S. agency. At the very least, when I go to the site now, the clinicaltrials.gov, we find that there are seven, two of which are not yet recruiting. So there are a few more than there were before, but still really not that many, especially when you compare that to, Zach, please, may I see my notes? Thank you. Especially when you compare that to what we can now see in the published literature, what is going on in the rest of the world. There are so many studies, but without the full force of the American government behind them. That is to say that they, you know, without NIH backing, without the incredible scientific establishment that the U.S. can bring to bear on problems, why is the U.S. government not I'm sorry, you're trying to tell me something and I'm not sure what it is because I can't read your writing. I'm sorry. Okay, so there is a review, Carr et al., 2021. Oh, no, actually, first we wanted to say that a new paper by Saha et al., Zach, if you will, published this year, submitted this year, in fact, and published this year, March 2021, the binding mechanism of ivermectin and levosalbutamol with spike protein of SARS-CoV-2. So that's all we need to show of that. We're not going to go into depth in any of these papers, but basically what this paper finds is the mechanism of action by which ivermectin might work against SARS-CoV-2, which is by binding to the spike protein, which turns out to be so prevalent in so many stories around SARS-CoV-2 is the spike protein.
Yeah, because the spike protein is essential to getting into the cells in order to do the bidding of the virus, blocking the cell protein is an obvious go-to move, which is why the vaccines look the way they do. The distinction here, though, I would point out, is that ivermectin's mode of action is loosely analogous with innate immunity. In other words, ivermectin was not constructed in order to target the spike protein of SARS. It generally has an effect that gets in between the spike protein and the cells that it might invade, preventing the mode of action,
yeah,
which implies that the chances of SARS-CoV-2 evolving around it are much reduced. Right, because this is not a specific thing that can be undone by slight changes. It's a generalized activity, right? So you've got a comparatively safe drug. We've got a known mechanism of action, which frankly you don't even need, but there is one that's fascinating, blocks the activity of the spike protein, and it appears to do so in a way that is unlikely to be subject to small evolutionary changes disrupting it.
And I guess that's also a fit for how many applications we already know that are, FDA approved for ivermectin. There's so many different pathogens that ivermectin seems to be effective against, that it working as a, is kind of a broad spectrum, antiviral in this case, but antipathogen.
Antipathogen.
Yeah, and I don't think broad spectrum antipathogen is a term of art.
It's a weird category.
Right, but it seems to be that. So there's also a review. This is Carr et al. Don't show my screen yet, Zach. Ivermectin as a potential drug for treatment of COVID-19, an in-sync review with clinical and computational attributes. This is also published the 3rd of January this year. A couple of, they basically are just, these guys are reviewing other people's research. And most of the studies are small. The N is small in almost all of these studies because there are no giant clinical trials that I have seen yet. They say another study by Alam et al. Reported that ivermectin and doxycycline's combination is very efficacious in SARS-CoV-2 clearance in patients with mild to moderate disease. Later they say, according to the results of another paper, which we'll link to all of these, ivermectin combined with doxycycline was safe and efficacious in early viral clearance in patients and took less time than in this other paper. They were comparing it to hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin combination for viral clearance. So they just, I'm not going to walk through this whole table, but they run through the summary of the papers that were available to them that they reviewed. And in all of the cases where there was a ivermectin being compared to some other treatment, ivermectin was doing as well, but usually much better. So
let me pause us there. So you will see frequently in the discussion of why we mustn't talk about ivermectin, you will see the claim that there are no large-scale studies that would give us the evidence. What is meta-analysis that actually looks at many studies as just, and that is in fact a better kind of evidence. So it would be nice if we had a really large, long-standing study, but a meta-analysis that gives you a consistent indication is equivalent more of a large study. Large study can be biased. Analysis biases of various different researchers will tend to be canceled by the fact they won't be consistent between these things. The other thing to say is large studies are great because they reveal very small effects. When you have a require a very large study to see it. So the correlation of all of these things is very strongly suggestive that ivermectin does work. And what we know about from the context in which it has been used as an antiparasitic suggests very safe, which then we would have to put in to the juxtaposed alternatives here.
Well, I'm not totally cool. I think I would put my finger at NIH and some of the, you know, the care places for the new U.S. were normally the ones who help make happen, help facilitate the large-scale studies. You know, it's exactly these organizations who are their representatives here saying, well, we can't assess this because there are no large-scale studies. Exactly while I think we are seeing evidence they may be helping make sure there are no large-scale studies. That, you know, that's a problem right there. And then you also have the other kind. I know it's not a large, it's not a large study, but basically going back outwards and looking at results, having done a without imagining that's what they were doing, they effectively pulled an experiment on several populations within Africa. But before we go there, with regard to this Kaur et al. Review, I did want to just spend a moment talking about the fact that many of the studies that they were reviewing were combining ivermectin with doxycycline, which is an antibiotic, and sometimes the so-called control group, the other group, was hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin, Zithromax, which is another antibiotic. And this struck me as surprising. You know, I'm not sure why we are expecting these drugs that are understood to be antibacterials to be effective against a virus. And this seems to go against a one of the few things that we learn in sort of basic biology about drug efficacy, and you know how, you know, doctors should never be prescribing antibiotics when what you've got is a virus, you know, when what you've got is a cold, right? So there's again, just like we're in complex system space, and somehow ivermectin in combination with doxycycline might actually be even more effective. I'm worried about widespread use of doxycycline. You know, it's also effective as an antimalarial, actually, but it is it has known effects with regard to sun exposure. And so, you know, when you're on doxycycline, you're really not supposed to be spending time in the sun because you're much more prone to burning. And of course, we also know that spending time in the sun is good for you with regard to defending yourself, to defend your body, defending itself against SARS-CoV-2. So there are a lot of things to juggle here.
So let's sort that a little bit.
Okay.
One, it is interesting that in the case of things that are not bacteriological or fungal, that we see increasingly that antibiotics, which we have been told should be limited to the use against fungi and bacteria, turn out to be useful. So this is a welcome to complex systems phenomenon. Hey, you're getting surprised by something that you didn't think to predict. B, that's not to say that it makes any sense at all for a doctor to prescribe an antibiotic when you do come in with a virus. Who's to say what affects what? And C, we also learned back, you know, decades ago about how safe these antibiotics tended to be, and that turns out to be wrong, right? These things have downsides because, of course, welcome to complex systems. So, you know, what landscape are we in? Pretty hard to know. Whether the NIH is integral to why the big studies don't exist, maybe, but I think the point is you somehow, at the root of all of this, is some weird license with no limit to a double standard, right? So if the powers that be decide they don't like something like ivermectin, they can establish any standard up to a ridiculous degree that nothing can overcome, right? When it comes to the thing that they favor, there's almost no standard at all, right? There's no level of danger that could be sufficient to call it into question. And so we don't know what that looks like on the inside, but what you can see is the hallmark of it is a double standard that is glaring if you know how to analyze what's being said.
Absolutely. So when we began to really be thinking a lot about ivermectin again a week ago or so, I said to you, I wonder if, given how widespread and given how many decades ivermectin has been used to decrease pathogens in Africa in particular, if that may not be playing a role in why many African nations seem to be doing much better than you might otherwise expect. And you know, there are other reasons to cause these, of course. We found two papers this week, and I imagine there might be more. We found two papers, one of which is this one, Zachary. This is Helwig and Maya, titled, it published in the International Journal of Antimicrobial Agents, titled "The COVID-19 Prophylaxis? Lower Incidence Associated with Prophylactic Administration." Including ivermectin. Based on the various varying MDA designs, we grouped these countries into two different categories, those that include ivermectin in their prophylactic chemotherapy and those that do not. We then proceeded to compare COVID-19 proliferation between these two groups and further contrasted them against a third group of countries that do not use prophylactic chemotherapy at all. So they've got three groups they're comparing, groups that simply use prophylactic chemotherapy because of all of the other things that are in, you know, that are endemic in these countries. Like river blindness. And of those countries in Africa that use prophylactic chemotherapy, there are two sets, one of which has ivermectin in the prophylaxis and one of which doesn't. And then there are countries that don't use prophylactic chemotherapy at all. And here, Zach, is figure three from this paper, which shows, for those just listening, on the y-axis we have incidence, cases per 100,000 people, and the three categories. On the left, we have prophylactic chemotherapy that includes ivermectin, a short, squat image because there are a lot of countries and they have very low incidence rates. In the middle, we have countries that use prophylactic chemotherapy, but those don't include ivermectin. And then we have there aren't very many countries in that group. Most of the countries in Africa that use prophylactic chemotherapy include ivermectin in their chemotherapy treatment. And then we have a number of countries in Africa on the right that use no prophylactic chemotherapy at all. And so the authors go to great lengths to say, look, we know that the sample sizes are way different and that this is coming in after the fact and all of this, but look at these numbers. The countries that were already deploying ivermectin at the population level have far lower case rates than the countries that are either deploying chemotherapy, again, chemotherapy meaning something different. Chemical therapy, yeah. Without ivermectin or none at all, right? So that is a very interesting piece of data. Thank you, Zach.
So I'll just say this is effectively a natural experiment, right? So things vary between islands. This is countries vary in what they've been doing, and we can now look at the difference between those countries, and it is a profound difference, which we can't say for certain comes from this. But
and here's just the other study that does very much the same thing. Okay, this is Guerrero et al. Published again this year in this is a Colombian medical journal. COVID-19, the ivermectin African enigma, it is called. This is the paper just in PDF format. They, under their remarks, they have three. What do these results contribute? Our data suggests that a mass public health preventative campaign against COVID-19 may have taken place inadvertently in some African countries with massive community ivermectin use. Additional studies are needed to confirm it. So that they come to really the same conclusion as that first study, but there's two of them not working together who looked at very similar data, probably basically the same data, and came up with the same answer.
So our viewers ought to be considering this question. In light of conspicuous patterns like that, and in light of the fact that the drug in question has a very long, extreme safety record, why wouldn't you test it, right? Why wouldn't you do that large-scale study? Why wouldn't you deploy it somewhere to see whether it had the effect and then discover whether or not this was I don't think we've said this time, but this appears to be effective in controlling COVID from people who've already contracted it and preventing contraction, right?
Yeah, and so treatment and prophylaxis.
treatment and prophylaxis. If you imagine, the thing blocks the spike protein, that's integral to how it gets between people. It's also integral to how it gets between cells, right? Mm-hmm. So this is highly effective in both cases, it would appear. So what on earth is the excuse for not testing this?
Well, unfortunately, I think I may have at least part of an answer. But one more thing before we go to that. So if you can pose that question once more in just a minute, let just point out, this is a paper from pre-COVID.
I do.
Yeah, I do too. What's called an observational study, published in 2019 in the British Journal of Dermatology, it looks like. I think that's what that's going to stand for. Called Ivermectin Safety in Infants and Children Under 15 Kilograms Treated for Scabies, a Multicentric Observational Study. So this has nothing to do with COVID at all. This is simply, and it's nothing to do with efficacy, actually, even. Like, I think from what I can infer from this paper, efficacy in ivermectin against scabies had already been established, but now they were looking at, look, can we actually give it to really tiny kids? Can we give it to infants and kids under 15 kilograms, which is like 33 pounds? And what they find is yes, they find, you know, obviously there are always risks, but this is a remarkably a drug for something that has such broad scale efficacy.
And remarkably safe. In this case means short term, and as far as we can tell, long term, because it's been in use so long.
Exactly.
So there you go. That was from the Dark Horse. It was extract. That's on 22-minute extract YouTube. It's about the right length for this type of show. 20 minutes or so is about the right length for a 30-minute show, because it gives me time to introduce it, make some comments. And I like the Dark Horse podcast. I'm very, very attached to the Dark Horse podcast, because they, speaking as scientists, they're evolutionary biologists, Brett and Heather. And I'm not normally a man who's even interested in evolutionary biology, but they make it interesting, and they're qualified to talk about virology, they're qualified to talk about pathogens, they're qualified to talk about biological stuff, because that's their place of expertise. So I don't have a problem with listening to what they have to say. Sometimes I agree with it, sometimes I don't. If I've got an opinion, it's probably from gut feel more than it is from evidence. But in terms of ivermectin, the research that I've done is basically watching John Campbell's videos, Tess Laurie's interviews about her meta-analysis, studies referred to on Trial Site News. So different sources of information, all based on medical research. Ivermectin comes out as a good prophylactic and a good treatment most of the time, with minimal side effects. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm not interested in taking a vaccine, but I would take ivermectin. And I'm going to ask my doctor about it at some point and see what he has to say. I was a woman last time, I think. But I've got to change my medical practice. I've got to move doctors, because I've moved since the last time I was there. But I've got no plans at all at the moment to take the vaccine. But I would take ivermectin as a prophylactic. That seems perfectly reasonable, like two or three pills, plus a weekly pill. Doesn't seem particularly unreasonable to me. And it's cheap. And it's got a good safety record, and it's efficacious. So that's the route that I'm going to go, but I'm going to ask my doctor and make sure that they're aware of it, and make sure that the local medical practices and the local MP are aware of it at some point. Haven't done that yet, but I'll put that on my list of things to do. So we're about on half an hour, so I'm going to close this one down. I'll be back at 6 o'clock this evening, now that I can get online from home. assuming that I can get online at home from home at 6 o'clock, I'll be back at 6 o'clock. But bye for now. Thanks for listening.